Thanks for listening to this Word in Your Ear podcast. If you'd like to get early access to all our productions ad-free, priority booking for our live events, and to take part in our weekly quiz, go to patreon.com/wordinyourear for more details.
The Word is a proud media partner of Latitude Festival 2012. For more information and to purchase tickets, go to www.latitudefestival.co.uk.
You're listening to a podcast from The Word.
We're joined in the pod this week by Melvin Benn, the man behind the Reading, Leeds and Latitude festivals. I started out by asking him what inspired him to start promoting live shows.
Probably the single thing that spurred me on was politics, really. And if anything, perhaps, Margaret Thatcher, really, probably was the thing that actually got me going in this, in a way.
In the business of promoting festivals, you mean?
Well, in the business of creating events, and myself and a friend of mine, Steve Pryle, in 1979, put on September 1979 what was probably the first anti-Thatcher campaign rally music event. That took place.
Oh, where was it, in London?
It was outside Battersea Arts Centre, and I paid for a lorry, flatbed lorry, and that was the back of the, that was the stage, and got a couple of bands.
Who performed at that?
Shane McGowan actually performed at it, because he was living in a squat with a mate of mine at the time, and that was the first thing
Honestly,
that I'd ever
I was
done,
there
actually.
Really? In 1979, I used to be playing in a band in Battersea Arts Centre. I was a saxophone player in a band that used to meet up with one of those collectives.
Indeed. No, well, everything was in a collective.
And we always went
then.
To all the events.
I lived in a collective, and... I lived
so
in.
So Shane McGowan was your first headliner.
I was living in Battersea, and I was very much politically active in Battersea around any sort of left wing bit of politics that I could get my hands on. And
in what way did that event make its anti-Thatcherite point? What was it called again?
I can't remember what it was called. I suppose it was called "Let's Get Rid of Thatcher" or something. I can't imagine it was called anything.
Does what it says on the tin.
And I'm always at pains to tell people that it was 11 years before her demise, but it was probably the single thing that started her demise and got rid of her. I'm always at pain. Now I'm sure she's a lovely woman, but I just didn't actually particularly like her politics at the time. So, and that's really, it was, I'd been a festival goer, I'd been a music fan, the whole thing really. But, in a way, what I like, or always liked, as much as music, was bringing people together around a cause, around an issue.
Absolutely, I really understand that.
Around
that was
a thought.
A flatbed truck with just some generators or something?
Yeah, just a little...
Extension lead going to the arts centre, probably?
The whole thing,
How brilliant.
And Jude,
how many people came?
Jude Kelly, who I think is really, she might be a dame now or something. She's very important in the theatre world, I think, was running the Battersea Arts Centre at the time, actually. Never quite embracing the politics that we wanted her to, but she was always relatively sympathetic.
So what was the next development from that? That you obviously were spurred on by the,
The thing after that is that I was very much part of an organisation called Battersea and Wandsworth Trade Union Council, and I was the chairman of the Trade Union Council. And the GLC was around at the time, and the GLC was wonderfully giving money away to people to create events, and we used to create events in Battersea Park.
It was a fantastic time.
I mean, it was just really, really good. And, we created events in Battersea Park, which were a mix of music and politics and selling beer and, having fun and trying to effectively trying to get over a a political message, really. A social message, probably, as much as a political message, really. And
so who were the next acts you were involved with? What kind of
I suppose then it became people like Billy Bragg and, you know, acts of that sort, you know, the Redskins. I don't know if you remember a band called the Redskins.
Exmoor, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
Went to the Rise of the Enemy?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, that was obviously very much around the, you know, the sort of anti-fascist thing that was, you know, very predominant around the time. And then, and a lot of Irish acts, actually. A lot of the people I seem to have known for a lot of my life seem to be Irish.
What kind of people?
Well, people around the trade union movement, and obviously Vince Power. You know, I spent a long time working with Vince. And Dennis Desmond now, more lately, John Reynolds over in Ireland. So, I've always had a strong relationship with Irish people, and always had a strong relationship with Irish music. So a lot of Irish music. And that sort of just continued. We then, for most of the early 80s, you know, we were organising these big events in Battersea Park. And when I say big events, there were, you know, sometimes 20 or 30,000 people would come to them, which was terrific.
That's a huge one.
Yeah, and then later on, with the GLC, the GLC decided to adopt the model that we had and make it a GLC festival. And to a certain extent, that pushed us out. But the GLC being what they were, you know, wanted to work with us. And I then, again, with the same guy, Steve Prowell, you know, created a company called Workers' Beer Company. And they're the company that serve the beer.
Glastonbury for years.
Yeah, that serve the beer at all of my events. And they're a company that it's a limited company. It makes profit, but its intention is to make profit and give it all back to campaigning organisations, really. And that's how we set it up. And that it still operates exactly that same way now. So our first bits, of course, were around the idea of selling beer and putting the events on in Battersea Park.
Yeah.
And then the GLC came along, and that was at a similar time to the miners' strike. So we started organising events to sell beer to give to the miners and all that sort of stuff, really. And then it happened across this chap, Michael Evis, really through a connection at the GLC, Michael's nephew.
What year are we talking about?
83, maybe? 84.
13 years into doing Glastonbury Festival.
Yeah, 84, maybe. And his nephew, a chap called Tony Hollingsworth, was working at the GLC because we'd started working with them around these big free festivals in London. And we'd developed the Workers' Beer Company. Tony suggested that we talk to Michael about doing the beer at Glastonbury. And, of course, we've done the beer, or they've done the beer, ever since, 1984, I think. So that's how I got to know
Michael.
That's
the first time you got involved. Because you're involved with them now, aren't you?
Yeah, very much so involved now, yeah. But that was
the
first time.
Can you explain that involvement?
Well, I mean, it's an extraordinary involvement in a way. I mean, I all through the 90s, all through the 80s, I'd been... I was in full-time employment, but running the Workers' Beer Company at the same time. And we used to go down and do the beer at Glastonbury every year and all that. And that was chaos. I mean, it was probably the worst period in Glastonbury's history, actually.
That was the time of the kind of anarchist interventions and...
Everyone climbing over the fence.
Climbing over the fence.
Well, there wasn't really a fence then, in fairness, Fraser, to be honest. Occasionally there was a fence, and when there was, they would either climb over it or
tunnel under
that's right, actually. Right. And so it was quite a. It was a horrible period. It was a horrible period, actually. You know, it was also the time when, there are all the jokes going around about, you know, the bankers and, you know, what's the difference between a hedgehog and a Volkswagen Golf driver, Volkswagen GTI driver, and it was the pricks on the outside as opposed to the inside type of stuff. And it was everybody, you know, that... there'd been this sort of development where, you know, Thatcher had denied that society existed, and it was every man, as she described, every person, as I would describe, for themselves. And it was a nasty period. It was a very nasty period in UK society, not just at Glastonbury. And Glastonbury, all festivals are always a sort of a reflection of society.
The particular local problem was that they were threatened with the possibility of loss of licence, weren't they? Because they couldn't control the cost of people in there, and there's a health and safety issue.
That came much later. That came 15, 20 years later. That was in 2000, 2001. In the 80s, it was all about the travellers and New Age travellers and the 80s and the 90s. And
and Michael did extend the hand of friendship to those guys.
He did. They never reciprocated it. They just took advantage of it, actually. And I remember Michael and myself literally defending the farmhouse against them when they were throwing petrol bombs at us.
This is during the festival, presumably?
This was just after the festival, two days after the festival.
What, because they wouldn't leave?
Because they wouldn't leave and all that sort of stuff. And, I mean, the idea that anybody would throw a petrol bomb at Mike Leavis, I mean, it's just unbelievable. But that was literally what was going on in the 80s. And obviously, to a certain extent, that's how Michael and I became good friends.
I can imagine great friendships would be formed in those circumstances, manning a barricade.
I do give
him a lot of credit, though, because, you know, sometimes you look at those stories. I remember him telling me all those stories once when I interviewed him, and you thought, well, I'm amazed that he persevered with it, really. Because it would have been really easy to have let it go, but obviously he had
He's a wonderful human being, actually. He's a wonderful humanist, despite the negativity that people may bring forward, he always wants to believe the good in people, really.
Well, the leader of the anarchists that caused all that trouble in the late 80s, he eventually, he'd given them a field, do you remember?
That's right, yeah, yeah, yeah.
He said,
if you
want to set up an alternative festival, you can, we'll give you this field, but just you keep your distance from us, and we're trying to do something else over here. And that guy eventually became immensely penitent. And about, I can't remember his name now, but about 15 years later, he came back and was apologised to Michael, was re-employed by the festival to run Lost Vagueness. Do you remember that whole
section? Of course, I remember
that.
Lost Vagueness,
the very guy that had given him all that misery 15 years beforehand. So there was a very pleasant circular
That wasn't Roy the Gervitz, was it? Was it Roy Gervitz?
It might have been. I can't remember.
Well, Roy created Lost Vagueness, yeah.
It probably was Roy.
Yeah.
But at what stage did you form Festival Republic?
Well, Festival Republic came out of Mean Fiddler.
Yeah. Which is you working with Vince Power.
And basically that all came about because in 1988, Reading Festival had gone bankrupt. And the then promoter of Reading Festival, Harold Pendleton, who used to own the Marquee Club and various other bits and pieces, tried all the major promoters around in the UK at the time, and nobody was interested because festivals were absolutely, you know, weirdos went to festivals. There was nobody, you know, it wasn't part of normal music society, interestingly enough. I wasn't really even part of the normal music business.
But why would that make that potentially interesting as a business? Well, because these were people who were difficult to control, or what?
Because the only two festivals that existed was Glastonbury and Reading Festival. Reading Festival had gone bankrupt, so that didn't bode well. Glastonbury was a relatively small festival, 10,000-15,000 people at that time, that was just for hippies and weirdos, really. So if you were a normal promoter, promoting Simply Red or whoever it was around at the time, it'd be like, why would we want to be involved with that load
that
of just too difficult? And actually, Harold had nowhere else to go, and he ended up knocking on Vince's door at the Mean Fiddler up in Harleston and saying, do you fancy this? And Vince, who had never been to a festival, being who he is, he's like, yeah, why not? I'll have a go at anything, really. So, that's what he did. And so I then went along, me and Steve went along and said, look, we'll do the beer for you. And, I've been to Reading Festival from 1972 onwards and all that sort of stuff. I know the festival and, let's get together and make it all work. And so I created a company called the Festival Office to work alongside Mean Fiddler and create the festivals. eventually that went into Mean Fiddler, and I became part of Mean Fiddler, and Vince and I just ran along very happily for quite a number of years, really.
And how did you make it work then? What did you bring to that particular equation that made Reading flourish eventually?
Well, I guess ultimately talent buy-in. Ultimately talent buying.
Who were the kind of acts you had, the headlining acts in that?
Oh, the Wonder Stuff, the Pogues, yeah. Very much part and parcel of it, and people like the Cult and, bands that were, around. And it was at that, late 80s where the 80s had been a tough period. And if you think about the 80s music, it was glamorous, and it was sort of, it was all. It wasn't really about being in a field.
No,
the
80s
music.
Yeah,
it was mostly pop.
Music.
Yeah, mostly pop, all that
colour,
sort of stuff. And so festivals at that point had lost their way a little bit, really.
Sure.
And the music had lost its way in terms of, rock music in particular had lost its way, which is why, Reading, one of the reasons, not the only reason, but one of the reasons why Reading went bankrupt. And so we came in with, newer, fresher ideas and appealed to an audience that actually thought, this is all right, we'll go out into a field. And we created the idea of multi-stage festivals. That didn't really exist. We put comedy into it, and that didn't really exist, and off we went, really.
You have been listening to the free feed of the Word podcast. The full album-length version is only available to subscribers to the magazine. To sign up and to hear the rest of this podcast, go to www.wordpodcast.co.uk.